You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, our shapeshifter this evening is Alice Welio Moyo, who happens to be the sister of our previous guest, Dorcas, who was telling us a little bit about Botswana and the top 10 places that we can visit there. Also marking, of course, her own right as well, showing up as sisters in this particular world. Now, Alice is the CFO of Time A and PM Proprietary Limited, and of course, is a seasoned executive and a strategic leader. I find people with such titles like very, very inspiring. They make me believe it. Yeah, we can get there as well, right? And she's a strategic leader with over 15 years of experience spending across, of course, the corporate industry and corporate sector as well. And she's joining us on the line. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Thapelo, and good evening to the listeners. Thank you for having me.
How are you today?
No, I'm good. I'm a little bit of nerves, but I just look at it as a friendly chat with yourself.
I'm actually the one with nerves here.
I'm just going to settle in a bit.
I'm the one with nerves here. I'm like, where do you even start with a career that spans 15 years or more? Where do I start? I mean, when you're talking to a CFO, you're talking to serious people.
I know, it sounds exhausting.
You know, like it's an illustrious career. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, I should have worn my tie and suit. You know, you're going to talk to a CFO.
Oh, my word.
So you're talking serious things and money and all those sort of stuff. Eh?
Yeah, you always got to be prepared
exactly.
With these things. You never know who's going to walk into your office. Bona. So you always need to have a jacket
Bona.
Or something.
Ah, wait a minute. We are here. To get. How was your day, though?
No, my day was great. Yeah. It's always on the ball. It's always about, I run a high pace task list. I call it a hit list.
Okay.
So it's always, it's always rolling. And I like to keep it that way because I'm into just making sure that the day stays productive and that I'm continuously, achieving and showing up at work. So you can feel it. You can see in how I'm walking throughout the office. Ooh. You can see in how I'm interacting with everybody. Ooh. So I like to keep it positive. I like to keep it happy.
Okay, so seems like we've lost her there. I'm not sure whether it's the line. Let's see if we can try that line again, and hopefully she can. We've lost you there a little bit, ma'am. But I think you're back.
Me back.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. So you're saying the way you walk in the office.
You can tell by the pace that she means business.
Okay.
So I'm a busy body.
Yeah.
But you can also see it in my smile that I'm just a very bubbly, happy. So I'm just, there's just a lot of passion.
Oh, wow. You see why I'm intimidated. Sitting here, I'm like, the first thing we do, we Google. You're like, hey, I want to see this person that I'm going to be talking to. You're like, ha! I almost said to my producer, I'm not sure I want to do this interview.
I'm glad you did.
No, I'm glad
you did, and you have me virtually in your studio.
I'm being brave. I'm like, I'm going to brave it out. Belt it out if I have to, but I'm just gonna do it because I was like, the excitement is more than my nerves.
You got it, champ.
Exactly. Now let me start here. We were talking to your sister Dorcas, and she sounds like a powerhouse herself. And I was also just checking out her travel agency as well. How do you guys do it?
One of the things she's always said to me, we've got aunts that are older, Auntie Joy and Auntie Alice.
Okay.
And one of the things she's always said to me is, Alice, if we can just be like these two, because they're always together.
Yeah.
These two are joined to the hip. Yeah. They do every single thing together.
Yeah.
That is how I want our relationship to be.
Ah.
And I think it's, from coming from a big sister, she was quite protective of me, and even in the schooling and that, because she was some years ahead of me. But she brought me along in her journey, you know, like she made me understand what was happening, and it became a little easier for me to like step into the shoes. You know, you're plodding along. But as we grew up and, you know, the gap emotionally, at least, and in other ways started, you know, bringing us closer. She said to me, this is how we need to be, Alice. We need to be like Auntie Alice and Auntie Joy, because they are always there for each other.
Yeah,
and supportive. And I think that helped me understand that that's the nature of the relationship, and that's how we need to be. So even in the respective industries we've chosen to be in, and indeed even in the family business, we always make sure that we are there, we are aligned, we are talking. And if we don't agree, we definitely get closer to that position of at least understanding each other's views.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. Now, when we started the show, we had a quote from Rosalind Carter, and I'm just going to read it out to you. And I would really like to hear your thoughts, especially as a leader yourself and an executive. Yeah. Rosalind says that a leader takes people where they want to go, and a great leader takes people where they don't necessarily want to go, but they ought to go. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely agree with that, because you know, we've grown up with different perceptions about ourselves, especially around, you know, our confidence and our beliefs in ourselves. And sometimes you need that person that will, you know, like sometimes you can call that person a sponsor or a mentor. You need that person. You need those broad shoulders. And I mean, in this case, this can even be, you know, like you need that person that can just give you that little push to say, you know, this is the stretch goal for you. I know you can do it. And I think one of the most powerful things anybody has ever said to me is to say, you know, you can be whatever you, you want to be. And I think then I didn't understand actually what it meant. It literally meant I could do it. I think now I do appreciate it a lot more with a lot more confidence. But I think as leaders, we need to, you know, like you can see somebody's comfort zone. You can see they, you know, this is their little space. And but like it's your role to also just bring them up a little bit, out, draw them out a little bit, and ensure that they actually have the right tools in place to actually perform at that level. That's if we're just talking professionally. But yeah, you know, you need to make sure that you are there to support as well. And you create those opportunities.
Let's go back. Just paint a picture for us growing up. In where were you born, and what was it like growing up?
Yeah, so growing up, I'm a bush baby at heart.
Yeah.
Working in the city.
Yeah.
But bush baby, that's because I'm from the northern part of Botswana. And Dorcas would have told you how beautiful that part of the world is due to its tourism and, you know, water and wildlife. And now I'm working in the southern part of Botswana, because that's where it's a lot more urban.
Yeah.
That's where all the, you know, the corporate opportunities are. Growing up, personally, I'm a bubbly person. I think I've told you that. I love to keep that high energy, that consistent, positive, can-do approach to everything. I adore my family and friends. I laugh a lot. Sometimes at myself, because you can't take everything seriously. I'm a mom to two gorgeous boys. Aiden and Ethan, they're 3 and 6. And that definitely goes well with my high energy, being a boy mom. Professionally, I'm a hard worker. Everything is consistently threaded in, and I push myself to achieve, and I'm focused on delivering that value. In terms of faith, I'm an SDA. And I've held on to God. He's my firm foundation. And my mom being staunch SDA, you know, old time religion. And her parents were as well. She really helped me in teaching me about God. And I'm thankful to add that my dad got baptized about 4 years ago. So that was quite a special moment for our family.
That's really beautiful.
So grew up in that part of the world, being the northern side, which faces a lot of some issues. You know, like it was quite, I don't know whether to say there were some challenges growing up in that area that we, you know, we faced as youth. But I think that connectivity to one another always showed up.
Okay. And around the area, what were some of the socio-economic challenges you saw? Poverty, maybe sickness, you know, those type of things. Were those things that you could see as you step out of your house?
Yeah, I think then you see Botswana has, you know, your high, medium earners, but that particular part of the country is prone to poverty.
Yeah.
But I'd like to highlight some of the challenges, just, you know, maybe just being a youth and like in that area. So what used to happen, it would be like being a rural part. So your availability of the early childhood education would be an issue. And here I'm talking before primary school.
Okay.
So like in the end, some of the children can go to, you know, they can be sent to the farm in early childhood just to keep them busy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then along the way you can lose that, you know, that that love for learning, or just even catch up on it by the time, because then what you were doing before, you were not really nurturing that early childhood. So some of those opportunities, some of those challenges were there. And then also back in the days when I was growing up, and I mean, we're talking 40 years ago, Botswana has reached 58 years of independence. So a lot of things have improved.
Yeah.
But back then, getting to the bigger schools from those areas, and I mean, these are, you know, little villages.
Yeah.
Getting to bigger schools was the challenge.
Yeah.
So you're in your village, all you had was maybe like the, and I know you use a different curriculum, but you wouldn't have your senior secondaries in those areas. So what you'd have to do, you'd have to figure out, or your parents would have to figure out that, okay, where are you going? Who are you going to stay with? That was the challenge. Accommodation, you know, even your support for learning, where you're going emotionally, your food, your accommodation. And remember, these are the critical years before your university. So I think that was some of the challenges that like young people faced back in the days, to say, okay, where are we going? Okay, I'm going to stay with an aunt, or I'm going to stay with an uncle. Okay. So for the next 3 years, I'm away from mom and dad. And, you know, then there's also high expectations for you to perform, because, you know, you were sent there, you know, for a reason.
Yeah.
So I think that's some of the challenges. And, yeah, you know, employment, you know, employment opportunities remain an issue even up to date, in terms of just that skills match for a young adult, especially in the now. You know, around job creation, around just still continually building up the skills. But we've come leaps and bounds from that. But I would say, just adding that, those challenges from those areas, I think that was just what a youth would figure out. Oh, okay, I've reached this stage. Now I need to go to a bigger school.
Yeah.
Okay, what do I do between this age and that age? What happens with me? Who's going to provide, you know, these resources for me to achieve? And those were the challenges then, as a young person.
And talking about that, then, being the CFO, was that something that you've always wanted to be growing up, or did you have a different career, you know, that you wanted to pursue, and you found yourself in this career?
I've always wanted to be a CFO.
Okay, lucky you.
So it's just been a natural business sense, I think, nurtured from, I think the business side is from my dad, because he's a business owner, and he played a big role in, you know, my business mindedness, or my commercial mindedness.
Yeah.
You know, and from doing little things around his office, managing his diary, learning how to price stock ordering, reconciliations and doing things the manual way. I mean, now we've got computers, we've got AI. But I have always wanted to be a CFO. I've always wanted to excel in the highest level of my trade. And I think it's just, I'm thankful that I have, you know, reached this level. I don't take it for granted. It is a dream job for professionals at my level, but I also look at it as a stretch target because you are continuously having to solve for new and complex problems. So it's not, it's definitely not a comfort zone. It's an area where you continuously stretch yourself and you continuously learn a lot about yourself and the environment, and you learn to be better. That's, and you meet a lot of amazing people along the journey as well.
That's interesting.
Yes, you meet a lot of.
I mean, to be where you are, you obviously had to go through, you know, a lot of difficulties, a lot of challenges in your career. Do you remember your first job, and what was it like? Was it the toughest? Was it where you learned, you know, the skills that you now have? Like you mentioned, high pace, high moving, you know, we're dealing with things, and so let's get things done. Your first job, do you even remember it?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
You always remember your first job.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, those first, so I started my career with KPMG as a junior, and, you know, anything could be exciting then.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be shredding, it would be casting. I don't even know. Okay, I don't think normal people talk like that.
Yeah.
No, nobody says casting. But what I mean by that is it would be taking a calculator, taking a set of financial statements and adding it up for, you know, the supervisor back then. It would be like, oh, you know, I'm in here now.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to work ground up.
Yes, I'm doing it.
So, you know, that was some of the exciting stuff, you know, and it would be attending stock takes, you know, they get to a chicken house and there's 10,000 chickens and you need to figure out how to ensure that you count each and every one. And you're thinking, geez, this is just, how do I even get around it? And it would be anything from going to a brickyard, counting 2 million bricks.
Yeah.
These were the sort of things that, you know, starting off, it was a lot of, you know, a lot of, I would say, these very detailed tasks to then being able to think, you know, think away from that detail and at a high level and be able to also support the your junior team members, ensuring that you do explain the same procedures. And eventually you're like, oh, was that me?
Yes.
You know, being able to show another person and then your supervisor, you're like, wow, I've gotten to supervisor. And then you reach manager and you're like, hey, this thing is happening. So, you know, it's your studies, you're balancing your studies, you're balancing your articles. You know, you're balancing all of that out, and you know, you still have to show up as you, right? And still love what you do.
Fantastic. And what
gave I started with KPMG, and then that was some 8 years, and then I went into banking at APSA. For 8 years, and then I went into a cement manufacturer for about 3 years before my my current role is a CFO of a real estate company, and it is listed on the stock exchange.
Ooh,
on the Botswana
nice.
Stock Exchange.
Look at you! That's the. I wanted to go back to say what
that's
gave
why I was
you
saying
resistance?
It sounds exhausting talking about it all.
I know, right? I wanted to say,
like, what, is that all me? Did that all happen?
You did it, all of
in that many years. But anyway,
I wanted to say, what gave you the resistance back then? You know, shredding papers, you know, casting, like you were saying, and all the stuff. What made you not to give up?
And that was never an option, by the way.
Oh, okay. Giving up was never an option.
The giving up.
Okay.
That was never on the table.
Sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, with growing up with just talking about backgrounds and what influenced you, you know, like you grew up with strict parents, you showed the discipline, you got the family got the work ethic from the family business. You grew up in a big family where you guys were dishing up lots of plates.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be putting them all over on the fridge, everywhere. Exactly. There are 30 plates while all eating those stale ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, that helped me to be good in terms of my flexibility, my sharing, my connectivity. You know, I mean, we didn't have a choice. We were joined to the hip.
But I
think in terms of values, I would also say my faith also influenced a lot about me.
Yes.
I never gave up. It always mattered what God thought of me, my situation. And I always knew where to turn. So even when times got tough, you know, I'd always, you know, God is faithful, and I'd always put my faith, faith in him in that, okay, today we, you know, we learn to put this down. Yeah. It's Monday's problem.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we come from a place of strength from there, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I love that. I love that it was, you know, knowing how God thought of you. It's always what mattered to you the most. As you went on. One challenge in your career that you look back and you're like, yo, this was tough.
Sure. there have been many challenges. Nah. And I think we knew that, you know, it's just never going to be a walk in the park.
Yes.
I must say, disclaimer, the parents, our parents, they made this look easy.
They
really did. I was talking to a friend of mine and we're just talking challenges, and we both said, these parents, they made it look like it's a breeze.
It's a scam.
Wait until until you are adulting.
They never told us the truth about being an adult.
You know, it's next level.
It's a scam.
To know that it's next level.
Yeah.
So I've dealt with a lot of challenges, you know, from complex business transactions, you know, it's been acquisitions, disposals of businesses, to handling a staff restructure, to debt restructures, to, you know, personally, even in your career, you know, being overlooked on a promotion, waiting for something to happen. You know, I've faced it, and in a very human way, you know, like when I say human way, I mean, I faced it head on to say, right, this is where I'm at, God. But I know that you will open doors for me where no one can. And I think that's really, really the testament to say, listen, challenges will be there.
Yeah.
You know, they will continue to be there. Yeah.
Okay, and then the highlight, one point that you like, this was the highest. I felt like I was doing it. Is it now being the CFO?
Definitely in terms of career, but I want to highlight one which is close to my heart. And I think it's, for me, it's about having maintained my character is a real high for me.
Yeah.
My compassion for others, my integrity, absolutely loving and loving to see others learn and being developed is my passion.
Yeah.
But what I mean by maintaining my character is, you know, sometimes we're told to harden ourselves as leaders in order to achieve or to succeed to the next level. And we've seen that softening up in recent times. But I'm just so grateful that I've always remained true to myself whilst doing what I love in all situations. And I haven't compromised on that. So that for me in my career is actually my high. I've mentioned the amazing people that I've met along the journey. Yeah. My network is full of these amazing people. And I'm sure some of them are tuned in right now.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
And then, of course, you know, reaching this point on the back of years of some back-breaking work.
Yeah.
And also waiting on God. who's been faithful. So I can, you know, I can say that's been some highs there.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And I'm sure when you look back at all of these, it's like, you know, I'm glad I just kept to the true north. You know, when you know what's the true north, your character, your love for God, knowing what exactly you want to achieve, no matter what distractions come along the way and the difficulties maybe that you may face along the way. Just keeping to your true north becomes a very, very important one. Now, we are a money and business show. And so I'm going to ask the next set of questions, because for me, I was telling Dorcas, anything with money, excites me. So I love conversations about money. So when you look at your relationship with money, how would you define it?
So, okay, professional is very close because I have to make financial decisions all the time. And these inform everything about my job.
Yes.
On a personal front, I would say my relationship with money, I've gotten to a lot closer, secure relationship with money.
And
that's been through the lessons that I've learned along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we all need to learn those lessons to get to a secure relationship with money.
Yeah. Sure. And what would you say is the one mistake you've done with money?
Everything from under budgeting, over budgeting, cutting it down to a wire, being a woman, you know, fashion, the trend, compulsive shopping, you know, you need to see how that, you need to understand how that impacts your family.
Yes.
You know, drive for investments.
Yes.
As women, we are also hunters and gatherers, in the sense that we want to provide for the family as well.
Yes.
So I think some of those lessons will be, you know, you need to test and balance that out. So that's been a big lesson. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
And in terms of testing that theory and actually, you know, how much of that is, you know, is real and tested and proven.
Yeah.
And it's a great investment, has been a big lesson for me.
Sure. Now I want to ask you just a side question. I mean, you deal with money every day. So you've got this closer, like you said, relationship with money. How easy are those conversations with your kids?
Phew.
I mean, they can't lie to you about money. Hey, they can't shy you.
Yes, and you know, you hear them saying something like, "Mommy has a lot of money," and you know, just because you know, like, if you try and say, you know, you try and rationalize them.
Yeah.
Oh, but you know, like you can hear they want to understand.
Yeah.
The truth is, they just want to understand. I think the best age to start with them is, you know, round about, you know, as early as my 3-year-old, I would say you start teaching them how to save money.
Yeah.
Take them along on the weekly shop.
Yeah.
You know, so just so that they understand.
Yes.
And then they should understand how you're paying. Are you paying by card, cash? Mm. What's going on?
Mm.
You know, is it in deeds? What's happening? You just sort of try and bring those little examples, you know, to them, just bring it a little bit, and then definitely explain the needs and wants.
Yes, that's very important.
Baby, do you really need this?
Yeah, that's very important.
Yeah, and you rationalize them. It's really hard for them to understand. They don't understand why. Like Aiden right now, my 6-year-old, you know, like he'll say, you know, his toy monkey needs a friend, and you know, like tomorrow it's something else, and then, and then, you know, like it's just... Yeah. This insatiable amount of spending, and you're like thinking, no, we really need to.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Later on, you don't want to take them to the shops because you're like, this is going to be a nightmare if I don't control this.
It's going to get out of hand.
It's going to get out of hand. So I think my advice is from an early age. Start teaching them how to save, start teaching them what money is, and you know, get them on board in terms of how, as a family, you plan your spending and how to choose carefully. Because remember, the needs and wants, they have to learn how to choose carefully.
Yes, yes. Now, there's a stereotype about people who are in finance and business, you know, that these people are very stingy. What would you say? What would you say? Because they count every cent.
I know. I was actually chatting to a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And she's in marketing, and she was like, oh, you know, getting a budget from you finance guys can be such a challenge, you know. And yeah, of course, you know, we also want to do the fun stuff, guys.
I mean,
you know, we want to do the fun stuff.
Exactly.
You know, we want to, I want to get the merchant, want to get a, you know, big promotion. And then, so, but anyway, yes, there is that whole big thing about us being stingy.
Yeah.
We like to call it prudency.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. It's being prudent.
Yeah, but I think, you know, with all things,
yeah.
No, but on a serious note, with all things, I think it's about balancing out.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
At the end of the day, yes. What is the organization trying to achieve? And at any point, your finance person or the person in charge of the finance side of things, everything should tally back to that goal.
Yeah.
And I mean, they obviously are there to be a safekeeper and to be a safeguard.
Mm.
But I think it's in balancing that out. If everybody understands each other's expectations, especially from the beginning around the budgets, I find that the conversation becomes easier. Mm. But yes, I mean, you know, it does create a lot of conversations that are continuous, because sometimes, you know, you unfortunately you're the bad guy. You have to remind them what happened at the beginning. This is what we said.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get emotional. It's exciting. Let's spend a bit more.
Yeah.
And then you have to be the one to come and say,
nope.
So yeah, we do sometimes get a bad rep from it.
Yeah.
But I think at the same time, it's about us as finance people to also ensure that we are fully aligned to what the organization is actually trying to achieve. And we get to a place where it's very realistic around the money.
Yeah.
And then of course we continue with our role, no matter how difficult it is. We have the tough conversation with the managers around you, around the realistic picture of the organization.
Yeah,
keep it honest. Make sure you safeguard them and you advise them accordingly around financial aspects. Honesty is actually what will, you know, will keep the organization going.
Yeah. So it's that so-called going concern in accounting that the marketing people don't get, eh?
Yeah, you gotta keep.
Yeah.
I have a lot of marketing friends, so I can't agree with you.
I fell into that one myself.
Yeah, you had me nodding there for a sec. You almost duped me into it was a trap.
No, let me protect you.
I almost walked through that one.
No, they can relax. I'm just referring to my marketing people that I know, right?
Yeah.
The marketing people think there's money everywhere. You know, you can just, you know, spend and spend and spend. But no, someone needs to rein in a little bit on that and say, hey, wait, we must keep this company going for the next coming few years. So that's really, really important. Okay, let's round it up with these the last few questions because we're running out of time as well. What advice would you give to your younger self, you know, with the benefit of hindsight as well?
Generally or just around money?
Just when you look at your entire life, maybe there must be that one thing you look back and you're like, "Eish, if I had told myself to believe more in myself that I can do it," or, you know, we hear such things. But what would be your advice to your younger self?
Listen, this conversation to some extent has been had, you know. I think it's too... You know, I've said this one is, I would say to my younger self, you know, stop caring what others think more than what you care about what God thinks, I would say.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because, you know, as a younger person, there is some peer pressure. There's that. I think I would also say, you know, it's just to learn to create those healthy boundaries around prioritizing time and what's really important.
Yeah.
Be confident, you know, stop obsessing over timelines and perfection.
Sure.
You are perfect. You are perfect the place where you are.
Yeah.
You look perfect because as women as well, you know, what's happening with me and everything. Yeah. At that age when you're very young. And then here's a tough one. Friends will come and go. And everyone had a role to play.
Yeah.
The right people are in your life right now and at any point in your life, and it's okay. Then another tough one for me, I learned to let things go. You know, being young, you sentimental, you hold on to things, you know, you hold on to it for, I think everything has a time and place and season. And God tells us that. So I think that one, for me, it's still a work in progress, even with the friends, because it's always hard to accept that loss, right? So I would say, as much as I want to say to the younger person, I want to say it to me right now.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, living in the moment, allowing God's peace to flow over your anxieties of tomorrow, your mistakes of the past, giving your very best now to Him. And then, of course, it's never too late to make a change. God is always by your side. Yeah. I think I think I would say to the younger me, who, you know, bushy-tailed. The younger me.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I think that's the same message you would also extend to the young people that are also listening and maybe also looking up to you as well.
Yeah, definitely to the listeners, you know, believe in yourself, believe in God for all things, and include God over your money matters, over your career. Don't limit or confine Him to religion. Just remember, He oversees all aspects of your life. So, you know, just trust that He will bless you exceedingly in all areas.
Fantastic.
Sure.
Thank you so much, ma'am. It has truly been a beautiful conversation. I think, like, you know, we need more time to talk about this one, but with time being the biggest enemy. But thank you so much for joining us. We really learned a lot. And
I'm honored to have been on your show. Well.
Thank you so much, ma'am. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.